And here, a very happy Mother's Day. So, no, I'm not a week behind. I'm right spot on. And that's my point today. I don't know if anything was given on this, by the way, already, but I wanted to mention that God's got a bone to pick with Mother's Day. Not overall with the concept, but with certain ideas. I'd like to read for you. And I'll start out today by asking you, here's your quiz for the day. I wonder who could get closest to this. I've got to get some of those signs where you can write and just stick it up. The total amount of money spent on Mother's Day cards annually, would you believe 10 million? You'd believe that? 10 million? Yeah, somebody said keep going. Okay, 100 million? Does that sound too much? How about 200 million? 300 million? 400 million? 500 million? 600 million? Where do I stop? How about 671 million? You know, 10 million sounded a lot. You know, is the figure skewed here? Well, let's look at this one. Total amount of money spent on flowers for mothers on Mother's Day. Same thing, 671 million? Now, cards are not as expensive normally as flowers, so you think the figure would go up. So let's take 671 and say, how about 900 million? How about 1.9 billion on Mother's Day? I'd say you kind of want to maybe get into the flower business. Total amount of money that will be spent for mothers on Mother's Day. 2 billion? Well, that was flowers. If you add the flowers and the cards, you would get close to maybe 2 billion. But how about 14.6 billion on Mother's Day? So I've got another statistic just to show how many mothers in the world are today. About 2 billion mothers are out there today. Total amount of babies that are born each second, 4.3. There it is, 4. That's an amazing figure to think about how big this world is, isn't there? So right now, just in my speaking, there have been another 12 mothers added to it. It's almost like our national debt going up. Now, this is interesting. The total percentage of dads that think that small gestures are more important than buying items on Mother's Day. See, I kind of would have, a long time ago, I started rebelling a little bit against man's ideas. I did not want man to tell me when to get my mom a card. So often I would do it the next week. So I thought, I'm going to rebel the same way today. I'm going to talk about that today. Just to rebel against what the world is trying to tell us to do. And plus, most of you are probably acts of service people anyway, so I thought I would just do an act of service, save the money on getting flowers. But total percentage of dads that think that small gestures are more important than buying items on Mother's Day is 94%. That's interesting. Well, how do you get all the flowers being bought then? Are they kind of combining that, or do 6% of the dads buy all the flowers and cards? Total percentage of dads who say they take over mother's responsibilities on Mother's Day, 83%. That's interesting. So you get guys on Mother's Day that'll actually go, I think I'll vacuum the carpet for you. Or maybe do a load of wash. Or maybe make a meal or something of that nature. So some interesting perspectives here that I'd like to go back and look at a little bit of the history and then talk about the biblical relevance of this and its importance. Because still to this day, like I said, I kind of kick back a little bit against man's ideas sometimes. So all my children know that then when they're born, the first thing that comes out of their dad's mouth will not be happy birthday. It's call your mom. You had nothing to do with it. So first I put them in their place because we did. We had nothing to do with it. You honor your kids on their birthday. So what? You wouldn't have been here without her. She had to do all the pushing. So now, after you get that set in order, now happy birthday, way to go, you made it another year. But contrary to popular belief, Mother's Day was not conceived and fine-tuned in the boardroom of Hallmark. In the United States, Mother's Day started nearly 150 years ago when a woman named Anna Jarvis an Appalachian homemaker organized a day to raise awareness of poor health conditions in her community, a cause she believed would be best advocated by mothers, and she called it Mother's Work Day. 15 years later, Julia Ward Howe, a Boston poet and author of the lyrics to the Battle Hymn of the Republic, organized a day encouraging mothers to rally for peace, since she believed they bore the loss of human life more harshly than anyone else, which would kind of make sense when you're the one that's so tied for that child for 9 months, and it's not that the dad doesn't either, but you can understand the feelings of a woman when she loses, you know, her sons or daughters or whatever. But in 1905, when Anna Jarvis died, her daughter, also named Anna, began a campaign to memorialize the life work of her mother. And legend has it that young Anna remembered a Sunday school lesson that her mother gave her, in which she said, quote, "I hope and pray that someone, sometime, will found a memorial Mother's Day. There are many days for men, but none for mothers," unquote. Anna began to lobby prominent businessmen like John Wanamaker and politicians, including Presidents Taft and Roosevelt, to support her campaign to create a special day to honor mothers. And at one of the first services organized to celebrate Anna's mother in 1908 at her church in West Virginia, Anna handed out her mother's favorite flower, the white carnation. 5 years later, the House of Representatives adopted a resolution calling for officials of the federal government to wear white carnations on Mother's Day. In 1914, Anna's hard work paid off when Woodrow Wilson signed a bill recognizing Mother's Day as a national holiday. And a nice one at that, because it wasn't one of those where workers just got off on a weekday, since we keep that normally on a Sunday. At first, people observed Mother's Day by attending church, writing letters to their mothers, and eventually by sending cards, presents, and flowers. With the increased gift-giving activity that was associated with Mother's Day, Anna Jarvis became enraged. She saw what was happening. And her mother would be turning over in her grave today if she saw $17.6 billion. It misses the purpose. That's why I thought I'd give this today, to kind of put the stamp on it. Was Mother's Day last Sunday? Or is it today and tomorrow? Do you have to wait for the world to tell you when to honor your mother? Because, you know, that's what many think. I think I'll give Mom a call today. You've done your duty. Now you can wait till Mother's Day. And that attitude prevails, even through the church sometime, doesn't it? Well, I think I'll do God His duty. Come to church service, and I've done my duty. Give the offering, I've done my duty. Is there no other time to honor God? Is there no other time to honor Mom and Dad? So it wasn't a happy thing. She believed that the day's sentiment was being sacrificed at the expense of greed and profit. Was she right? Evidently so. In 1923, she filed a lawsuit to stop a Mother's Day festival. Here's the one that was promoting it. And she was even arrested for disturbing the peace at a convention selling carnations for a war mother's group. Before her death in 1948, she is said to have confessed that she regretted ever starting the Mother's Day tradition. It went beyond its intent. It became filled with greed. Despite her misgivings, Mother's Day has flourished in the United States, as we know why. In fact, the second Sunday of May has become the most popular day of the year to dine out, and phone lines and cell phones record their highest traffic, as sons and daughters everywhere take advantage of this day to honor and express appreciation of their mothers, which is fine. That's fine. Unless it becomes, that's it. Is that it? Have people done their duty now? That can be the mentality. What does this have to do with the church today? Do you know why? There's certainly a huge amount of commercialism involved in Mother's Day, and certainly nothing wrong with setting aside a special day to honor mothers, providing this isn't the only day that a mother is to be honored. It says honor your father and mother. Didn't say parentheses, on the day which you select. Doesn't say that. The concept deals with the basic element of God's law of love, summed up in "you shall love your neighbor as yourself." See, the thing that you progress in over the years, becoming a part of God's church and God's people, these are the concepts that we're going to have to instill in others that make it through the tribulation and on through the resurrection of billions of people that have practiced greed and selfishness. And it's going to be hard sometimes to ingrain that concept and to get them to unlearn things that they have learned all of their lives. The concept of giving and not just getting. You know, it's specifically defined by the fifth commandment found in Exodus 20, verse 12, as you know, in Deuteronomy chapter 5. Here we all are, our basics on that. You would all know where to find that. We all were familiar with the song that was sung today, and it's certainly nice to be able to sing that and to refresh our minds with that, which states, "Honor your father and mother," which is also followed by a promise, "that your days may be lengthened, that it might go well with you in the land which the Lord your God gives you." Interesting that that one commandment, so important that an added promise was to it. As I've come to look at that term, by the way, both my physical parents are deceased. Does the commandment stop for me? Do I have to not honor them? No, the honoring is still there, and I'm certain that you would know how. It's reflected on the good things that they taught me. I'm going to see them again. And they're going to ask, "Well, what'd you do with your life? How'd you do? Did you make us happy parents?" For the good things that they tried to give to me. And obviously, it goes back to our Father in Heaven, our true parent in that way. But we're still a reflection of our parents, though they might be deceased. That goes on for the rest of our lives. We honor our mothers not by simply saying a few nice words, maybe a phone call and a card, and some flowers. We honor them by reflecting and living by the wisdom and teaching that they have given to us. We honor them by adhering to the manners, the etiquette, and the morals that they have displayed and taught. And I know everyone has not always gone through this. And it's sad to say some that haven't, that some have had bad mothers. It's probably due to the fact that they didn't have a good upbringing and teaching either. It's been a disaster and a mess as we see our society caving and the disrespect that's out there. I know for years the way that I was brought up is to call somebody Mr. and Mrs. And you don't see much of that. Yes, sirs, and things of that nature. You don't see much of that anymore. The hoary head is not always respected. So allow me to share a few things that my mother taught me. My mom taught me about religion. When I spilled the grape juice on the floor, she said, "You better pray that that stain will come out." I remember that one. She also taught me logic from her decisive words, "Because I said so, that's why." Remember that one. She taught me foresight when she said, "Make sure you wear clean underwear in case you get in an accident." That one kind of confused me. I thought, well, what good is that going to do after you get in the accident? She taught me a little bit about irony besides that one. She said, "Keep that laughing and I'll give you something to cry about." She taught me endurance. "You're going to sit there until you eat your spinach." Many of us, I sat at the table probably for at least for 2 hours because I wouldn't drink tomato juice. I was not going to have it. I would drink it and probably throw it up. I just, you know, then you'll learn to like it. Or the starving kids in India, I got that one as a kid too. I was going, I'd be glad to package this and send it. So all of the humorous things that we have growing up, isn't it? She taught me about the weather. She said, "It looks like a cyclone went through your room." You know, my many here can remember some humorous anecdotes in their relationships with their mother. God does play a very important value with a woman's role in teaching. It goes beyond just the motherly values. Let's go to Titus chapter 2, verse 1. These are things that we can continue to examine as God's people and God's church. And many out here can still ask, well, what is my application? What is my responsibility? And that's something that you'll have to go before God to do and ask. You know, how can you teach? How can we fulfill what's being spoken of here? Because, see, the church is supposed to be a tight-knit family. It's not supposed to be every person for themselves to where you'll come and do your own thing and go your own way. There are people here that look at other people, maybe for examples, maybe in the way that you dress, maybe in the way that you speak. That's part of a teaching role too. Here in Titus chapter 2, verse 1, it says, "Speak the things which reflect sound doctrine, that the older men be sober or be vigilant, that they're grave or honorable and honest, self-controlled, sound in faith or truth in doctrine, in love and in patience." Verse 3 says, "The older women likewise, that they be honorable in behavior, which exemplifies or reflects holiness, not slanders, not given to much wine, and teachers of good things." See what we have to still learn to tweak as we go through life? It's never done. It's never done. No matter how old one can get, it's never done, because the teaching can be reflected in the example that one sets, even in speaking to other people. That's the way it's supposed to be. Look what it says in verse 4, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children. Those values are supposed to be taught and passed down. And sometimes we've been so dysfunctional, it's been hard to teach those values. It may be hard, but it's still something that we're supposed to do, that our younger women will see those examples. And maybe they should actually maybe come up and ask, you know, what's made it for you to survive all these years, to be married for 40 and 50 years? What's worked for you? I would think that would be a good question to ask people that have been in the church for that long. What's worked well for you? That's the closeness that should be the bond of a true close church. Verse 5, it says, to be discreet, or to use wise judgment, to be chaste in purity and in modesty. Wow, the fight that's out there in the world is incredible. When you see the caliber of the women today and what they have to face with Hollywood and magazines that they see and the doctored and touched up photos, and then not just that, but the incredible amount of tattooing that's being done. It's incredible. You know, where's the modesty? Where would the true men of godliness look for a good woman? One that's got tattoos all over her arms? That every other word that comes out of her mouth is a curse word? That dresses like there's nothing there to put on? That's the way it's gone. It's very difficult. The only thing they have is within our church today. And it's been a struggle. It really has. We still try to teach modesty. And it's of the values that the women should be teaching at home to their daughters, and not being afraid to stand up for what's right and say, "Hon, you're not going to wear that. You can't wear that." Why? Because it's not modest and it's not appropriate. "But all my other friends." That's right, all your other friends. It's hard. It's not easy. But it's still what we're supposed to be doing. That's to be reflected. It's reflected in our camp programs. I've known some years, thankfully, that our counselors who come up out of the preteen, who come out of the teen camps, who have been taught about being virtuous and taught about modesty, they'll look at some of their girls and they'll go, You're not walking out. You're not walking out of the dorm wearing that. Not happening." Well, if you don't like it, you sign the paper. We all have statements of how we're to act, how we're to dress. We deal with piercings and other issues. They come out because we don't want it to be a stumbling block for the week that they're there for other people. So there, see, this is what we stand for. Now, and we don't have the measurements either, by the way. We haven't gone to those extremes. It's been more balanced. And sometimes it's not always easy. How short does it go? And, you know, where do you draw the line? Hopefully people are looking after God's heart and seeing the examples of the women in the church. It's an important example to set. It says here, homemakers, which is difficult, isn't it? Because a lot of the women have to work now. It's not easy. But she still provides a home. Now, I remember the sign that said when my mom did stay at home and grandma did stay at home and my wife stayed at home. I can't remember if we had that. The plate where it says the woman's work is never done. And it really isn't. You know, I evaluated that as a kid a long time ago. When you make a breakfast, you got to clean up the dishes, then make lunch. Then clean up the dishes, then make dinner. Then clean up the dishes and start all over and over and over and over and over. You know, it's a never-ending thing that that normally the woman will do in providing for her family. I spent a lifetime watching that with my mom and my wife. That's simply what they did as providers for the family. Then the husband was supposed to get in there and help out once in a while. Well, that's not a woman's work. No, it's a family work. It's something that, on occasion, that you share and help out and work together, especially as the woman has to go out there and work. And there have been some fine examples of women and husbands, wives and husbands, that have worked together like that. It's never been ideal. I don't think it's what God intended to be, but society's changed. And it's been so difficult. It used to be my dad went to work and came home, and mom did the laundry, did the dishes. My wife stayed home. We had the blessing of that. The kids would be there. She chose to homeschool. How difficult is that sometimes? And having to educate, which we felt we'd rather do that at home rather than send our kids out to be educated by someone else. It's a very difficult task sometimes. But there's lots of different examples within the family. And God looks upon that, and he blesses those that follow these examples. He said that the word of God, in verse 5, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed, because that's the way he intended. So we see that good behavior, actions, words, and deeds certainly reflect our Heavenly Father in Jesus Christ. But they are cultivated by the mothers that God designed from the very beginning. And God looks upon that, and don't think that your work is ever in vain. Maybe we don't say enough in appreciation for all the things that have been done. Now, we easily take that for granted, especially for me as a child growing up. And it was just, I never had want. The breakfast was always there. And for us, it was like something was going to be going on Monday. Monday might have been oatmeal day. Tuesday was scrambled eggs day. Wednesday was pancake day. And Wednesday was definitely change the beds day, and I didn't have to make my bed. You know, and mom washed the sheets that day. Wednesday, that's what it was, hump day. So, and maybe her knees went bad because of all the trips that she did going up and down the steps. You know, for years, that's the washer and dryer were downstairs, up and down and up and down and up and down. And so it was never easy. Never has been easy for the women that have to work at home. So, you know, sometimes it's been, well, the guy brings home the bread. You might make the paycheck, but it doesn't mean that you worked any harder, is it? So sometimes that's not acknowledged. But let's go back to the beginning and examine God's purpose and plan when it comes to this most important role. In Genesis 2, verse 20. Genesis chapter 2, verse 20. God gave responsibilities to both. Here we see in verse 20, it starts out by saying, Adam gave names to all the cattle and to the fowl of the air, to every beast of the field, but for Adam there was not found a helpmeet, as it says for him. He caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept, and he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh at that place. And with the rib which the Lord had taken from man, he made a woman and brought her to the man. Once again, as we tend to read over scriptures so fast, we just see, well, that's what it says, that's the way it is. But did you ever ask why? Why did he not make woman of the dust of the ground? He certainly could have done that. And I thought about that and just interjected and said, you know, God took the dust of the ground and he made something better out of the dust of the ground. He made it into the man. Then he took the improved product and he made something better out of that. So he took the rib of Adam, which was already better. Now he made, you could say, another improved product. Something even more special. I'm sure that Adam felt that way. You know, that's the first time you probably heard a woo! Something of that nature. Could you imagine how Adam would have, you know, really? I mean, here he's seeing all the cattle, fish, crocodiles. He sees this and he's going, what in the world? What's going on here? Are you happy, Adam? Pleased as punch. Adam said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She'll be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother, cleave to his wife. They will be one flesh. And there was an entire purpose for this. In the following verses, something resulted, though, in a curse. But not the entire thing. Genesis 3, verse 16. Genesis chapter 3, verse 16. If there's anything that you can kind of verify, oh yes. I verified this within my family, because I definitely was witness of painful labor. Right there in front of me. Unto the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your toil in your pregnancy. In painful labor you will bring forth children. And your desire will be for your husband, and he will have dominion over you. Half of that's the curse. Not the other half. God intended this relationship from the very beginning. He didn't change it. The help we meet was supposed to be there, but man was always given the responsibility. The woman was taken from him. She was to be a part of him. He was always going to be stronger. Never better. Because as I just said, it seems like the woman was the improved product. So the multiplying in the pregnancy and the labor, yeah, we're witnesses of that every time you see a baby. Oh, just four more being born, by the way. Oh, 4.3, by the way. Oh, another 4.3. So, ow, ow, ow. I'll be hearing these owls. If you could hear the pain, it was definitely there as I witnessed it. But here, and we'll show this as we see the thread throughout the Bible, is this is the way that God had set it up. This was the intent. There were to be parts that were to be played. And what we have a hard time comprehending even is seeing what the outlook would be in the future when we all become a part of the family of God and there is no more male and female. How is that going to work out? And we might see women in positions of responsibility that outweigh what a man's would be sometimes. Because again, there will be no male and female. That brings us to some guidelines laid out by the Apostle Paul. Let's look at Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. This was to be the family structure of the way that God laid it out. We have just really totally, like everything else, totally blown it. You know, when it comes to, as we've discussed, when it comes to food production, when it comes to finances, I think of the way, you know, we get accusations. Some in Congress have accused our president of not bringing forth a budget, and yet the budget that they would bring forth, they would get fired for anyway. So what's the point? Oh, that's your budget? Oh, really? You don't know how to do a budget. You're all fired. Because the whole idea is you don't spend more than you take in. And so we're talking about provisions that were supposed to be provided for the people in the form of Social Security. Whoever started taking from that one should have been fired right away. And yet that's still a mentality of many of our people. You know, it wasn't the first guy that started doing that. The rest of it would be doing it now too. They don't know how to handle finances. So that one's all been blown out of proportion. Dealing with food issues, that's been blown out of proportion. Dealing with families and family structures, that's been blown out of proportion. Everything that we've witnessed in our life, when it comes down to principles that God intended, has been totally foiled. And Satan has been the biggest deceiver of all from the very beginning as we watch this, but these are the things that we're supposed to be focusing on, that we can be teachers of these things. So it says in verse 22, wives, be under subjection to your own husbands as to the Lord. Wow, that's foreign in this day and age. You know, we've had those words that sometimes are totally written out of the marriage ceremony. Do you faithfully promise to submit? Submit? You've got to be kidding me. After what they've seen in their marriage, no woman's going to be submitting to this guy here. So we've seen that one totally distorted. That's the way God intended it to be. But it was to be a relationship, not looking at submission as we have it nowadays, to where all the way back to the Old Testament, you see the woman became something of a dog. So it's nothing new. Women became less valuable, became possessions in their husband's eyes in many cases. Today, as I talk to our people in Jordan, they say, well, how is it when you've got to travel? The woman can't give the Muslim taxi driver directions. He won't listen. It's not going to happen. The woman's got to talk to the man, and the man will have to give directions. it's just inbred within their life. It's not even really a slam. It's just like, not listen to her. That's the way it's become. And so therefore what happens in life, is, as it did in this country, is it went from one extreme to the other extreme, to where you've got the women's movement that men are rejected, and the whole family structure is therefore thrown out, and we get the results today. Verse 23, it says, "For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church." So that was the example from the very beginning, and he is the Savior of the body. "Therefore, as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be subject to their husbands in everything." Hold on, wives, mothers, don't leave, because there's more. There is more. After a word from our sponsor, stay tuned here. There's more incredibly important information to have complete balance and harmony in this relationship. So see, now we actually go on. Read on to verse 25. "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it." Well, you know, I go to work and I take care of her, I provide for her, and I might call my mom on Mother's Day. Oh, that's... Wow. He's a good guy. Calls his mom on Mother's Day. Even sends her a card and flowers. It's a joke. That's what's so pathetic about it sometimes. It's not that it's not a good thing. But some people, it comes right down and saturates right into the very church of God. Because people can sometimes think that they're doing God service just by following through with some of the rules. And they miss out on the entire intent. Do you really love your wife? Do you really love your husband? How do you manifest it? Do you really love God? Do you really love Jesus Christ? How do you manifest it? Is it lip service or just following through with certain deeds? Or is it a way? Is it a way of life? "Love your wives, even as Christ loved the church and he gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself as a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but it might be holy and without blemish." Here's where we're at today. So interesting as we go throughout the years and examine the state of the church, and this I'll throw you out as a bit of speculation. I do believe the time is at hand. I do believe that it's close. You know, how close? The time element sometimes will blow our minds. But as we watch, and we're supposed to be watching the world events, we find the demolishing of the family in our very own country. We wonder how even we're standing, even economically. How is this all staying together? Is it focused around the church? Because it does say that the bride has made herself ready. The bride has made herself ready. Are we there? Is this what we're doing? Because God's not one of those game players. No, it says the time will come. This is it. And either we're focusing in on what we're going to have to be doing in the future, or God's going to say, "I'm going to go out and find somebody who's serious." Time comes for that. That's what he says. Do we want to play a church game, or do we want to look at these principles and get serious? And every single day, we're making strides and inroads to understand these principles and to get better. Because God's not going to accept a doctored up resume saying that they came, well, yeah, they acknowledged mom, you know, once a year, called her once in a while, that they really honor their father and mother, which is a reflection then of honoring God and Jesus Christ. Did they really do that, or was it just lip service? Verse 28, "So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loves his wife loves himself. For no man ever yet hates his own flesh." Remember Genesis, where he said, "This is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh." "But he nourishes it and cherishes it, even as the Lord does with the church. For we are members of his body, his flesh, and of his bones. For this purpose will a man leave his father and mother, be joined to his wife, and they two will become one flesh." Here he's just reciting the entire purpose of what we went back to Genesis chapter 2. He just kind of summed it up, old now to new. He's saying the same exact thing. The purpose was there from the very beginning. And then in verse 32 he says, you know something? This is a great mystery. Most people don't even understand this, unless they're called and given the gift to understand God's great mysteries and the purpose of mankind on this earth. They just look at marriage as a custom, something that people do. And so how easy it is to distort it to the point now man is marrying man, woman's marrying woman, pretty soon man's going to be marrying horse. Doesn't stop, does it? Why not? Why not? Some brainless person's going to come up with the idea that now maybe the horse can get a tax deduction. Who knows how perverted it gets? This is a great mystery. He says, I'm speaking concerning the relationship between Christ and the church. That's the example within the family. No wonder that the women are supposed to do as Paul spoke to Titus and be the examples. Men too, they're included within that also. Verse 33, nevertheless, or that being said, let every one of you in particular so love his wife, even as himself. And the wife see that she reverenced her husband. You know, Paul certainly acknowledges the rulership, the oversight, or the dominion of the man over the woman. But it was to be rulership, oversight, and dominion with a godly and a passionate love. For God so loved the world. Not as some kind of taskmaster. Not as, you do as I tell you because I'm running this family. Never was to be that way. It was always to be a family or a team concept, an effort with, really, the greater responsibility belonging to the husband, belonging to the father. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1, let's continue to see God's intent for this relationship within the family. So here it addresses the women, it addresses the husbands, and now it's going after the children. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. In other words, you obey them as long as they're following God's ways. If they tell you to steal, you don't steal. That is to listen. When it talks about obey, it means to listen attentively, to heed or conform to a command or an authority, to be obedient to. Verse 2, it says, honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. Well, what promise? Verse 3, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth, and that you fathers do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Do you know, as most of you know, the care and maintenance of these relationships are not at all easy. It's not easy to honor one's husband if he treats his wife like a taskmaster. It's not easy to love one's wife if she nags her husband and disrespects him. It's not easy for a child to honor his mother and father if they're not setting a godly example within the marriage. Let's turn to another scripture which shows the relationship within the very church of God. In 1 Corinthians chapter 14, very difficult one for some to understand, and a little bit offensive sometimes unless we understand this is the way that God made it, and to the man belongs the greater responsibility and onus of that responsibility, of which we will be accountable before God for, and all of us with those responsibilities. But as I said, when God gives the man that high of a responsibility to have authority in certain areas, then his authority will be weighed and judged for that. 1 Corinthians 14, verse 34, it says, let your women keep silence in the churches, for it's not permitted for them to speak. And this is speaking once again within the church setting. That's why you've seen it traditionally within the church of God. You're going to have male speakers. You're going to have males that will take normally the lead within the services based on the foundation of these things. But look how detailed he gets. See, one must understand and study the context of these verses. It says they are commanded to be under obedience, as also says the law. Verse 35, it says something unusual. If they'll learn anything, let them ask their husbands at home, for it's a shame for a woman to speak in the church. Is there a problem with that? The point is here, if you're going to acknowledge the dominion and the oversight of your husband and you've got a question, why would you go to someone else? Do you disrespect your husband? He may not know, but at least go to him and ask him. Where is the tightness of that bond when it comes to Scripture and biblical study? This is what he's pointing out. Don't usurp your husband's authority and by saying, well, I'm going to go over here and ask him. Well, do you not have a husband? Ask him. He may not know. And you both can approach the minister and ask someone. So he was talking about something that became disorderly. It became a problem. This is Corinthians, by the way. This is the letter to the Corinthians. They had a ton of problems here because the structure was being violated in many different ways, this being one of them. So Paul had to go back to a specific and get the structure right. We normally don't have a problem with this today. You know, although I've heard some in the past say, well, why can't a woman song lead? Because these are the positions and functions that God has gave to positions within the church for the oversight of the congregation. And a woman was not to usurp that, just as the woman's not to be the husband. He's to have the responsibility. Now, that's what's happened sometimes when there's been divorces within family, then sometimes a woman has to take charge. That's not normal. It's not the way it should be, and it disrupts the entire family structure. The purpose of these verses can be found before and after these inspired commands from Paul. Before, we see in verse 33. See, we read verse 34 and 35, and these are what he said. Verse 33, he says, "For God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all churches of the saints." So wherever you go, you may go to Africa, you may go to France, you may go to Ireland, you're basically going to say the same thing because of we don't want confusion. Well, what's going on there? Well, what's happening there? What you can expect is the same thing, not just in that, but even in the way that we handle services. In many cases, you're going to see, you're going to go somewhere, it doesn't matter where it is. You'll have songs and you'll have a prayer and you'll have a shorter message in many cases. And the longer message in the sermon, that's what you'll say. It hasn't been confusing. And you'll see it after. In verse 40, he says, "Let all things be done decently and in order." What's the order? The man is the head of the wife. The children are to be in subjection to the husband and wife. Paul was saying here that God gave man the leadership role, the oversight within the family and within the church of God. A woman was not to usurp that authority given by God. Let's understand the differences here. God has given man the role of leadership at this point in time. As we have seen in Titus, the woman has a teaching and a nurturing role. Which role do you think is more important? The oversight or the teaching and nurturing role? I think they're weighed equally. Who said this? Next part of the quiz for today. The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. You'll find this interesting on who quoted this. Powerful man of his time. He understood the woman's role. The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. Napoleon Bonaparte. Very interesting. Do you think this once powerful leader understood the importance and influence of a mother? See, a leader and a teacher slash nurturer are both service positions. They are positions of responsibility of which this world and even the church sometimes has difficulty in learning. It's that old pendulum swing, one way or the other. It's either an oppressiveness, an oversight, or there's no rules at all. And God has both. And he pointed out equally here in Jesus as our perfect example in John chapter 13. But before we go there, we'll turn there last, but I'd like to turn over to Proverbs chapter 31. Proverbs 31. Let's take a look at this model, in one sense, of perfection. And let's equate it to today. Now, not all these positions, and not everyone has been, many have been actually even more than this, when you relate it to today, though. In Proverbs 31, we'll pick it up in verse 10. And here it's speaking about not necessarily the mothers, but the wives. So we see all the different roles today. We see the mother, we see the wife, we see the woman, and the roles that God has given within the church. But who can find a virtuous, a woman of valor in the sense of the forms of excellence? For her worth is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts her. Wow, when you can have, imagine that, a woman that you can count on. So he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. Have you seen that? I'm so grateful that I've got the memories of not only my mother, but my wife also. I remember my wife getting out her sewing machine and a serger. And I remember my mom working on the sewing machine. Some of you probably remember the mothers on the sewing machines to where they had to use the foot to keep the thing going. I remember my mom, when she would take our vacations, she had an entire bag of socks. And that's where I learned about darning. I would say, darn, there goes another sock. And I still have that wooden utensil that I saved to remember that. And Mom used to put that up into the sock and she'd sew the heel. How many do that anymore? There goes a sock, time for Walmart. Mom used to do that and put patches. It was kind of embarrassing at the time to go to school with patches in your jeans, but that's what we had and that's what she did. And she was thrifty and Dad trusted her, because she was frugal in the way that she spent money. And same in our lives, when my wife would go to Salvation Army, and she'd then tell everybody, all the women at church, of what she got at the Salvation Army. I'm going, do you have to tell them that? And found out that you can get some really nice things at Salvation Army. And women that were stuck financially and had to do those kind of things, that this is what this is speaking of, that lives up to our time today. She willingly works with her hands. So you've got women that have been gardeners and sewing and providing meals. She's like the merchant ship. She brings her food from afar. I look at this one and smile because, no, you know, you might have the Kroger's or Farmer Jack's right up the street. But if I know any woman, you're not just going to go to Kroger's. You're going to go to Engels. You're going to use the coupons and go over here, and you're going to look for the best deals. So what's the difference on going afar or looking at that one? I'm not going to pay this much here. I'm going over to this one. I'm going to go over here and go to this, and your day is probably taxed out from doing your shopping at this one, Trader Joe's over here. Get that over there. Same thing brought up to our day. It's a lot of work, isn't it? No matter if you've got cars, I know when the woman comes home, she's exhausted. Now, my wife tells me that's like her worst day. They don't like shopping. It's just one of those necessary evils. She rises while it's yet night and provides food for her household. The mornings that I know my wife and my mom would get up, and the meals were always there. Maybe hot chocolate when it was cold, because you care for your family. Those little touches that were so neat, but you have to get up early in the morning and you're the last ones to bed at night for cleaning up, getting the kids settled into bed, making sure everything's set, doors are locked, lights are off, all these little tidbit details that sometimes we just forget. She provides food for her household and a portion for her maidservants. She considers a field and buys it from her profit. She plants a vineyard. So she was involved. This woman was involved in actually looking at different properties and evaluating. I guess I can relate that to my wife. For years that we've been in Knoxville, has looked at the real estate market, and we've traveled to different places. She's the one that's contacted the realtors, and we visited this one, and we visited that house, and we're examining these and looking at these, and what's the best value, and what's the best deal. So you can bring it up to date now. She girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms and perceives that her merchandise is good. I've got some good value, she would say. I got a good deal on this. I've got this marked down, and you're proud of it because you've been frugal and you have saved. And it's not been for you. It's been for the entire family. I got a deal on this, so guess what? I can get that over there for my son or my daughter or my husband. Normally, it's not about you. It's seldom it's ever for the woman. You'll see in the family that she wants to buy something and get it for herself. It's usually for her family. She stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hand holds the spindle. That was a little bit confusing, so I looked it up, and I don't know if I brought the picture. But if you know what that looked, it was the spinning wheel of its time. It was called a distaff, to where you wove it, and the spindle was down here, and she had to hold it like that, and that's what you had. Those were the type of things that all the way back then of how they made clothes. So they had to go really to an extreme of spinning their yarn and then making their clothes from that. Now we've got, you know, Hobby Lobby and Walmarts and things of that nature. So it was even in a sense harder in a way then for doing that, those kind of things. She extends her hand to the poor. She reaches out her hand to the needy. She's not afraid of snow for her household, for Oliver's household is clothed with scarlet. I guess I can relate to that being from Michigan. You know, there were times when I had a Detroit Free Press paper route where I had to get up at 4:30 in the morning for probably 10 years, I think I had that paper route, because I got such good tips. But when it snowed, Mom, hey, Mom, can you give me a ride? And she'd get up and help me and put on her snowsuit. And she'd actually not just drive me, but she'd take one side of the street and I'd take the other side of the street. We'd deliver the papers together, even when it snowed. So I remember those kind of things. Her household is clothed with scarlet. You make your houses, not your you take a good sense, if there is, could be said one, in your a pride in your home, the way it's dressed out, and the decor in it. And you find things to make it really nice from the touches that the man wouldn't necessarily. I think I'll put a nice bouquet of flowers over there. That's not going to be normally the guy. He'll put his weightlifting stuff over there or something. You know, but that's the touch when you come into a house and you smell it, it's really nice. You know, it doesn't smell like a car shop. You know, you smell the cinnamon or the vanilla or the candles or whatever it might be. That's what they did all the way back, and that's what they still do now. That's the example. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. So see how the family unit worked together? Not everyone sat at the gate as an elder. Some people have thought, well, you're an elder, you sit at the gate. No, you don't. You know, if anybody was going to go to an elder at the gate, he would be respected. He would be a successful business person. He would be known to have some spiritual maturity so that you could go to the gate and talk with a person who was renowned among the people. That's the way it should be now. We was talking about that a long time ago with people and the way that things should be done within the church. That an elder is one that's respected. Not necessarily to know everything, but respected among the congregation. Not just one that would do a pastor's bidding or tell the pastor whatever he needed to know. That's not the indication that you get from that. Verse 24, it says, she makes linen garments and sells them and supplies sashes for the merchants. So it goes beyond just providing for her family. Now she's making some dollars to support and help her family. Once again, you bring that up to nowadays too. That people have taken on and the women have gone out and provided and worked extra jobs besides the family jobs that they have at home. While the kids are in school, they'll go out and do some work to provide some extra funds. Strength and honor are her clothing. She will rejoice in time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. See the things that we read back in Titus? She watches over the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. You know, soap operas are not even in the picture. How would a virtuous woman even have time? Well, I think I'll watch the Kardashians or General Hospital or something of that. No time. But you do get that, and that's not the example of the virtuous woman. She's caught up in the needs of her family and all the things that she has. And really, when you think about it, it's not done. the work is never done. So see what happens. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, he praises her. Many daughters have done well, he said, but you excel them all. He's looking to that one. See, we see the this is the one that we excel to. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she will be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in her gates. And God does bless that. And look upon the woman that has that kind of attitude. That's what we shoot for. You've heard of things such as raise the bar. That's the woman's standard to raise the bar to. And again, this is a little bit reflecting more on the women, but I tried to show a little bit about what it was to work as the husband to, and also the child within the family. There's a song that talks about, I hope I brought that. If I didn't, I must have left the song at home, so I'm going to read the poem instead. So this is for mothers on Mother's Day, today, not last Sunday. I'm rebelling. Thank you, all the mothers, for what you've done, all of you. This was written by Kim Horner, and I tweaked it a little bit. It says, this is for my mom. It's just titled, Thank You, Mom. If I took a little minute to write a poem for you, it would turn into a lifetime for all the things you do. So I'll try to keep it simple, and there's some things I wish to say. And what better day to say them today on God's Sabbath day? Life has not been easy. We know you've had it rough. With one thing or another, God knows when enough's enough. At times you were so frustrated and feeling rather low, but you're cherished by your family more than you'll ever know. We know that your desire was to be one family, but that will soon come true, Mom. Just you wait and see. In all my life, you guided me and showed me right from wrong. You are my inspiration, Mom. You're the music in my song. You were there for me when times were hard. You always were always close at hand. You guided me to happiness. You're the best mom in the land. I never could repay you. You're worth your weight in gold. If I ever would call on you, your hand was there to hold. Your advice was there to guide us, but you always had to say, it's your decision, sweetheart. You'll make it come what may. So thank you, Mom, for making me the person I've become. And though you're through your loving guidance, I'm a clone of you, my mom. It's a really sweet poem that was written. And let's finish by a scripture here. In John chapter 13, of something that we've gone through that also is not one that's meant for just the Passover. It's meant for all year round. See, a good mother is a good mother all year round. A good mother is to be respected and honored all year round. We shouldn't be waiting for Mother's Day to send Mom flowers or to give a phone call. See, that's big business. We see that. And I kind of like to reject big business now and then. We see what happens in the world when the merchants bewail themselves when the times of trouble come. Because it's been so filled with greed. It's going to be a whole different nature in the kingdom of which we're going to be teaching, providing we understand these principles that God is trying to show us. You know, there was one person a long time ago, you probably remember, he would do a little toast and he'd say, to the days that I spent in the arms of another man's wife, my mother. John chapter 13, verse 13, pictures the overall setting of what this is all about. Whether you're a father, whether you're a mother, or whether you're a child. Service is still taught within the family. I'm thankfully that I had a family that taught me about service. I had chores. I had to wash dishes. I remember my grandmother with a smile. I remember that. She was a registered nurse. We washed dishes at her house. That water was so hot. We had to rinse it in that water. You know what I do now? I wash my dishes in really hot water. following the example of grandma. Just what she did, and it's interesting how that is taught along the years. And when that cut was there, oh no! You know, somehow you couldn't escape grandma. She could smell a cut. And when she did, you know what came out? The methylate. You know, what hurt was now going to sting, and obviously it made it feel better afterward. But I remember that nurturing. I remember having the nurturing of grandma, of my mom, and seeing the nurturing and having the nurturing of my wife. Saw the example. See what we're talking about with the example? That the kids in the church will see those examples of little touches now and then that are so important for the family, that are memories that will be carried on for years. John 13, verse 13, Christ pictured that when he said, "You call me Master and Lord, and you say, well, that's the way that I am, but you know, this is a service position." He said, "If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash each other's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Verily I say to you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither he that sent greater than he that sent him. If you understand these things, if you comprehend, happy are you if you do them." And I've seen a lot of women that have had a lot of workloads, and they've been happy. Because the task, when they do it, it's before God. It's something that God designed for it to be done. And a man would feel the same way. A good, hard day's work is something that can be so fulfilling. And through all the ups and downs and the bumps and the grumpiness and the arguments that you might go through and your fight through life like that, you end up with a big smile on your face because you made it through that. Just like we're going to receive when we receive our reward, and now it's time for us to teach an entirely dysfunctional world that does not understand even the bare thread of the necessities and the gist of what we're talking about here and what we've talked about today. So let's give thanks to God and Jesus Christ for their wisdom and graciousness in granting us such wonderful mothers. Thank you all so much. And for their important role and vital position within the God-ordained family structure.